Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Shad Markowitz, and I'm talking today with Doc Jones, private investor and someone that's well known to a lot of folks on the investment blogs here at the KE Report. He's the second most followed person over at CEO.ca and also very active on Twitter. And Doc Jones, it's always great having you on the show to discuss the resource sector, to look at the different stocks that we're investing in. But I thought to start off today, we may take a moment and just back up and share a little bit more of your history and your investing journey with folks. I know that that's come into focus a little bit more recently for you, and we do have a lot of people writing us and asking for more information. So I guess I would just start off by asking, how did you get started with investing? You know, where did you get your money? How did you get on this path in the first place? And what led you into this sector? And then how does all that fit into the Doc Jones messaging?
Hey, Shad, thanks for having me on. Yes, obviously, my real name is not Doc Jones. You and I have had offline conversations before, so you know who I am. But for those who are listening, let's see, where did it begin? Well, shortly after I did my undergrad in economics, I approached friends and family to put together a small pool of capital that I could manage. And I did that for almost 20 years, and then at the end, cashed out. Now, prior to that, here's the chronological history. I first, when I was 19, I went to drama school. Thought I was like to be an actor. And then I found out very quickly that you can't make a lot of money with that. But I had another passion in finance. So I went to college, studied economics, was in Phi Theta Kappa, the International Honor Society. Then I approached friends and families, put together a pool of capital, began managing that with very, very successful outcomes. And then I went to college again and took business management, where I was nominated to be an international scholar laureate to go to China, Australia to study business there, but then chose not to. And I ended up going to opera school because I wanted to be an opera singer, which was another one of my passions. All this financed by the profits that I was making in the portfolio that I was managing. And then after I concluded with that in my early 30s, then I went to UCLA into the MBA program and studied equity analysis, hedge fund management, more macro, microeconomic statistics, stuff like that. And then in my early 40s, there was some attrition amongst the friends and family pool where people were retiring. They were at retirement age and taking their money out. So then I closed the fund and took my profits and retired. And then in 2018, I found CEO.ca. I'd looked at other social media boards for investing, and they were basically a lot of crap. And there it seemed to be a lot of intelligent people discussing fundamentals and reasons for investing that weren't based on emotion, were based on the actual analysis of the company's assets and their potential growth and cash flow. And started posting my research and why I was buying a certain company or not. And I had consistent run of successful outcomes between 2018 and currently. I invested in a little over 50 companies, over 30 of which have gone at least 3x. First year, triple digit returns in 2018, 2019, 700% return, 2020, more triple digit returns. 2021, triple digit returns, all adding up to over 5,000% return in that time, done by investing in over 50 companies. So I quickly developed a large following inadvertently. It's not something I set out to do. It just kind of happened. I ended up on Twitter because someone had told me on CEO that there was a group of bashers bashing a company that I owned by spreading misinformation. So I signed up for Twitter and I would seek out these posts, these nefarious posts, and then I would correct them with the actual real data and the facts regarding the company, which you can't debate with. And so I guess that's why I developed a following on Twitter. Yeah, and then I started a podcast interviewing the CEOs I was invested with because I felt that was the best way to have the story disseminated out to the public. They could hear it right from the CEO instead of from me saying, this is what the CEO told me. I said, it's probably more reliable if I just had the CEO tell people because then they can trust that more because I've always been about the data, right? That's what's important. So that's a bit of my history.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that, Doc Jones. And I think what got a lot of people's attention on CEO.ca and on Twitter was how well-researched your deep dives were in these companies. What caught my attention and the reason we first invited you on this show is because I was impressed by the number of articles you'd put out, the number of success stories you had. It wasn't just a one-hit wonder. Again, 30 out of the 50 companies had multi-bagger returns, and you put out the fundamental analysis and the reasoning behind it. And I also want to point out that you've never told anybody to buy any of these stocks. You're not pushing these stocks. You're not pumping these stocks. You're reporting on stocks that you personally invest in and sharing the thesis. And that's why you got the following. Could you clear the air that you're not paid by these companies, that you're not a mole that's been put in here to try to pump stocks, that this is just your own personal investing, what you're doing, and you're sharing your research?
Exactly. I am not paid by anyone. I'm not compensated by anyone. I ask all the CEOs when I interview them on a podcast, am I being compensated or paid by the company in any way? They all say no. The idea that every CEO that I've interviewed, there's what, 10 so far, I think, that all of them are lying, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't track. And I've heard that rumor, yes, that I was planted by FM to promote Amerita and whatnot. And that doesn't track either. Like, they would have had to planted me in CEO.ca 3 years before I invested in Amerita, given me a list of 30 winning stocks so I could build credibility. You know, it's complete fiction. And I understand, you know, the paid newsletter writer community out there is not very happy that I came along. This all started a few months ago when all these rumors started spreading, because someone, well, I won't name him, had posted on MindTwit that, hey, there's this guy, Doc Jones, and he's doing laps around you guys, and he's giving his information and his research away for free. What am I paying you guys for? And I was lapping them. My returns were superior. I made the correct calls all along the way. August 2020, time to scale out of gold. Gold and silver, and go into energy, uranium, and base metals, particularly the producers of base metals. And then later on, I said it's time to go into the developers, which led to those positive outcomes that I talked about, that 5,000% return over time. But there's a lot of jealousy out there, and I get it. You know, I'm giving away for free what other people are paying them for. Maybe those people will stop paying them for their crappy advice. Not all of them. There are some really good newsletter writers out there. There's a few that I follow, like Goldfinger's really great. There's Gwen Preston. I think she's phenomenal. Eric Coffin, really great. You know, I've actually learned a lot from those people. But again, it's do your research, and especially if you're going to subscribe to a newsletter writer, and see what their empirical returns have been.
Well, we definitely appreciate you sharing your thoughts here with us. And again, that's the whole point of this show. We're not giving out investment advice. We're not telling anybody what to buy. We're just sharing ideas and sharing research and talking about companies. But one other thing I think we should clear up real quick, just while we're on this topic, is Doc Jones. The name Doc Jones is actually a nickname, and it's because of a comparable to Indiana Jones that goes as Dr. Jones or Doc Jones in the movies, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Temple of Doom, etc. Maybe just share, how did you get that name? Why did you pick that? Because we get all these emails saying, this guy's not even a doctor. It's like, does it matter? He's giving research. But share, how did you get the story of Doc Jones, the name?
Well, when you sign up for CEO.ca, like I did in 2018, you have to pick an anonymous name. So all the names that I wanted were taken. So I've always loved Indiana Jones. And when I was younger, people used to compare me to Harrison Ford because I kind of looked that way. Or I did, maybe not now that I'm 50. So I was like, Doc Jones. And that was taken. So I was like, Doc Jim Jones? That wasn't taken. I was like, okay, well, there's a Jim Jones, a lounge singer in Vegas that I used to listen to. So I was like, okay, that works. And then it occurred to me later afterwards that, oh, Jim Jones, that's that cult guy. And I was like, oh, you know what? I'm not going to change it because that actually works. Because who's going to trust someone who has the same name of a cult leader who gave everyone Kool-Aid and they all committed mass suicide? They will probably be distrusting, and they will actually look at the data and vet it. Like I tell everyone, look at the data, vet it for yourself, you know? And I hope people have done that. I think people have. I get comments from people saying that I've researched the data, and, you know, I'm sure there are people who follow blindly, but I hope not. I hope people do their research, as I always say. You know, you have to vet the data yourself. Come up with your own thesis. Buy for your reasons, not mine. You could go through all my posting history for 3 years. I've never said, you need to buy this stock. I've never said that. I've always said, this is my money. This is what I'm doing with it. These are the reasons. I've broke it down for you here. And part of the reason why I initially started posting it is so someone could poke holes into it. You know, I've had a few theses that someone has said, you know what, that doesn't work because of this. And I was like, oh, thank you very much. That's supposed to be the purpose of these boards, but other people use them for nefarious reasons, I understand.
Yeah, I agree. And I think we would all be better served if we all just crowdsourced good information, shared insights. And I like to think of you more as the lounge singer, Jim Jones, with your opera history than the cult leader. But I'm sure some of your detractors would say, oh, that's all he is a cult leader. But the whole message you've always had, and you've been super clear on every interview we've done, is here's the research, here's what I'm looking at, tell me where I'm wrong, here's the facts as far as I know it, I've interviewed these CEOs, here's what they're saying, here's their own words, and do your own due diligence. You're not telling anybody to buy anything. I think that's a key to note. Now, you were just on a site visit in Colombia with a company that we have brought on the show, and that is NG Energy. Their ticker is GASX, and I'd love to get a recap of it, especially when we're seeing oil and gas prices just shooting to record highs, at least for the last few years. What was your takeaway from the site visit you just did with NG Energy?
Yeah, I was very, very pleased. You know, NG Energy invited me to do a site visit because I'm a large shareholder of the company. So I went down there and I saw they have two projects, the Maria Conchita, which is going into production, and their flagship exploration property, Sinu 9. So at Maria Conchita, I saw for myself. The pipe has been laid. It's connected to the main pipeline, the manifolds there, the storage tanks for the associated liquids, the water, the gathering system is all set up. I saw that the pipe had been laid to within meters of the wellhead for the East Ambul well, and then they got the permit to run the pipe across the drill pad to connect the other well, which is the Arachura, which will produce about 20 million a day. So I was very pleased. You know, when I go on site visits, I talk to everyone I can because I just don't want one person's point of view. For instance, the CEO, I just don't want to hear what he thinks is going to happen. I talk to the structural geologist. I talk to the drilling contractor from Italy. I talk to the petrol engineer. I talk to the guy who works for the company that's going to be selling the gas and negotiating the contracts. So I get a more accurate depiction of pricing. So it looks like by the end of this month, right now, we're at the point there where they're allowed to test the system with live gas, connect the wells and test live gas. That'll take 2 to 3 weeks. After that, commercial production will be declared and they'll be producing about 20 million cubic feet a day of natural gas, which economically it'll cost them about $1.50. They'll be selling it for $5.56, which means they will be earning from just those two wells 30 million a year in EBITDA. And then they have the Tinka well, which will produce 8 to 10 million. That'll be re-entered and added, as well as three other wells in the next, you know, 8 to 10 months. Because the gathering system that has been paid and built has space for six well connections. So you've got three historic ones that'll be added and then three new ones. So the system will probably get up to, in the next year, 18 months, you know, 12 to 20 months, let's say, to about 40 to 50 million a day of production, which equates to, you know, 60 to 75 million in EBITDA just from that. Now, mind you, the market cap right now is about 144 million. Now, Sinu 9, they're finishing the construction of the Magical Well drill pad, which is the first of the four high impact natural gas wells that they're drilling. This area had been drilled before historically. It has the same lithology as Canacol, which is right next door. There's been drilling these monster wells that are like 35 million a day IPing at. And so that pad is almost complete. They had to move it. It used to be 50 meters to the west, but the Department of Environment made them move it 50 meters to the east. So the pad's almost finished constructing. All the drill pipe is on site. The rig is in country. That'll be assembled. Probably next week they'll start assembling it when they finish the drill pad, and they will begin drilling that by the end of the month. That well will take, I talked to the guy, the Italian drill contractor. Actually, the drill contractor is very interesting. It's the same drill contractor that does all the wells for Canacol. They've had 100% success rate. It's the same geology, it's the same stratigraphy right next door. So he knows what he's doing, which is really great. And that well will take about 25 days to drill. And then they'll move to the next one, the next one, the next one. They're going to drill four wells back to back. Each one of these wells, you know, I got different numbers. And what it seems to be the conservative consensus will probably each one of these wells will produce 15 million a day. So that'll aggregate to 60 million, which 60 million is, you know, 90 million in EBITDA will come from these four wells. And then they will continue to expand on that, which was great. So economically, I look at that and I go, yes, yes, it's a good investment. I can see where the cash flow is going to come, and it's trading at a discount to its peers. But then, which is really fascinating, is they have the potential for oil on their block. Now, the Sino 9 block is over 300,000 acres, right? And on there's a fault that runs down the center of the block from north south. And there's these anticlines that have pushed up the stratigraphy of the lower zones closer to the surface. And there was four diamond drill holes that were done by the Geological Society a decade ago. And one of them hit this column of sweet oil with an IP of 33 over a zone of 353 feet of saturated sweet oil. And that is really exciting to me because it's close to the surface. So you don't have a lot of pressure, so you'll probably have to use a submersible pump to get it to flow. But because it's close to the surface, those wells will only cost you about $2.5 million, $3 million to drill. So they're going to do a wildcat well up there later this year, I believe. If they can get that oil to flow, it's going to be a completely different story. Like only getting a few hundred barrels a day of production because the well cost is so cheap that the IRRs on that would be in the mid triple digits. And because it's oil, it will get global pricing. Because natural gas in Colombia, it's a closed market. It's all used domestically. They don't export gas. They actually import gas. But any oil that they come up with will get the global pricing, and they can be exported, or it'll be bought in country to mix with the heavy oils. Like Frontera produces a lot of heavy oil, and they use light oil to blend it. So it's very exciting. It's very exciting times because the company has been running on a shoestring for a long time, and they're just getting to the point where they no longer will do that, where they can be cash flowing and they can accelerate their growth path, as well as there's some talk about them making some acquisitions possibly outside of Colombia and expanding to other areas of Latin America. But that's just rumor at this point, as well as they're looking at possibly bringing in a new CEO, that Serafino may step down and give the reins to an individual who has extensive experience in oil and gas in Latin America. I know that they had posited a few names. Whether that comes to fruition is not for me to say, but either way, I'm happy to have Serafino or anyone else, because Serafino, as you know, he's one of the most successful resource investors. He's a self-made billionaire. He's built multi-billion dollar oil and gas companies before, as well as gold and coal and zinc and tin. You know, he's a very, very well connected individual. So yeah, I was pleased. I feel good with the investment I made. I've been in the company for over a year now, so I feel comfortable with the stewardship of that investment by the company.
Well, I appreciate you sharing a recap of the site visit and some of the information you gleaned while there on site. And I would agree, Serafino is a legend in the resource space and has already got a very successful track record behind him. I'm sure we'll keep following along with the story and try to get them back on the show at one point for an update to investors. But just one more thing before we wrap here, and that is just the energy markets in general. I know that you cut your teeth on investing with the oil and gas sector and have been in that sector for decades. You were correct to call it a couple years back as a sector of growth, especially when there was those super low, almost negative futures prices. And you were saying, this isn't going to last. We're actually going to see triple digit oil. Well, we've seen it now. And with this Ukraine and Russia tension, Doc Jones, a lot of people think, well, once that is resolved, all the air is going to come out of the balloon and these things they're going to crash back down. And while they may correct some, how will you be playing the oil and gas stocks, and how are you playing them right now? Are you adding to positions? Are you waiting for it to correct? Do you think we'll sustain these prices? What's your overall outlook on the energy sector?
Well, I think as soon as there's a bit of resolution between Russia and Ukraine, you'll see oil prices come off in $20, maybe $30, but will stabilize. And long-term, you're going to see oil prices above 90, 100 long-term, because there's just no production capacity out there. You know, OPEC has almost exhausted its spare capacity and will be now with Russia offline. You have Canada that is introducing a carbon capping system for the oil and gas sector, which means they cannot expand or grow production. Quebec outlawed all oil and gas exploration and development. In the United States, you have carbon taxes that'll come in that are going to increase the cost of operators. Plus, the banks are not lending to the oil and gas sector, as well as pension endowments, major funds are being forced to divest from the sector. So they are capital constrained, as well as the oil and gas companies themselves are exercising discipline that they've never done before. They're not growing for growth's sake. They are paying down their debt. They are doing buybacks and dividends, and they are maintaining production and growing it marginally to ensure their survival in any price environment. You know, long term, the laws, as much as I would love for, you know, us to have no carbon being put into the atmosphere from any sector tomorrow, but the laws of science say that that's impossible for the next, you know, 30, 40 years to maintain life as we know it. The transition to green energy will be decades and decades long. Even if you took out gasoline demand, it's over 60 million barrels a day of demand for plastics, fertilizers, and thousands of other things that hydrocarbons go into that have nothing to do with transportation. And that is growing consistently year after year. And currently, oil demand is currently exceeding what it was prior to the pandemic. You know, at a time when we are hearing that the green revolution is on its way, people are still buying internal combustion engines. And right now, because natural gas is so expensive, like in delivery, Dutch gas is over $300 a barrel equivalent. Power plants that were running on natural gas that can are now burning oil because it's cheaper, surprisingly enough. You know, in some places, they just can't get gas, so they have no choice but to burn oil. So there's actually more demand than we've ever had. Yeah, it's as far as making investments in the sector right now, it's very selective. A lot of things have run. So I'm always on the lookout for a company that people haven't heard of that has a hedging schedule that's rolling off and they're going to be completely open and capturing the full spot price and that people haven't figured out yet. Like, you know, there's a few companies that I invested in last year that you know about where that was the situation. They've done very well. So, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now with oil and gas. It's hard in North America because there's so much political risk. So it's just finding the right situation. Outside of North America, it's a little bit easier. Offshore Guyana has done well. CGX Energy made a great discovery, and they had a really bad press release where people didn't understand what it meant by cap and abandon, which is completely normal process for deep water. You don't run a production liner into a exploratory well and then do a production test on it, because the development cost for an offshore, you know, you're looking at billions. So that was never part of the plan. But, you know, I think things will re-rate to their proper price after people come to terms with what reality is and how they've been panicked by a lot of the BS that's circulating around social media. Yeah, that's it.
I think we'll wrap it up there, Doc Jones. That's a lot of information for people to consider. I appreciate you sharing some of your background with our audience and with other listeners so that they know how you got into resource investing and how you got into investing in general. I liked that we were able to recap the site visit you were just on in Colombia with NG Energy. And I agree that the oil and gas sector still has a lot of room to run in these companies that have their hedges rolling off and they're paying down their debt. It's a good sector to be in. We'll keep following along. And just appreciate you coming on the show and sharing some of your thoughts with investors. Again, this is not investment advice. We're not telling anybody what to do. But thank you, Doc Jones, for sharing your thoughts with us here at the KE Report.
Yeah, my pleasure. And as always, people, you know, vet the data. If anyone tells you that you have to buy now because this is a great opportunity and it's going to be gone tomorrow, walk away. You know, the market is always going to be there. Take your time to really understand what it is you're investing in and what your money is going towards. What answers you want answered? What is your thesis? You know, sometimes the best investment is not making an investment, just holding your cash and educating yourself so that you can make decisions for yourself without listening to, frankly, guys like me or people on social media or whatnot. Just know what it is. Know what outcome that you're looking for. That's the only 2 cents I have. Like I've always said, vet the data, do your research. The math is the math. So anyways, nice talking with you, Sean.
Sound advice. Thanks so much, Doc Jones.